You are listening to the Punk News Podcast. We've got a very special episode today. A very special episode. We've got Kira of Dose, Kira of DC3, one of my perhaps semi-obscure favorites, Kira of Minute Flag, Kira of Black Flag, Kira of Game of Thrones, and Kira of the new band, not the new band, the returning band, Kira. Kira Rosler, thanks for coming on the Punk News Podcast. We are psyched to have you here.
So glad to be here.
Kira's got a brand new album coming out. It's real cool. It's called Enigma. It's to me, it is punk extraordinaire in that it's very first wave LA punk in that anything goes and anything might happen on the record. I think it's real cool. And it's got kind of some kind of a Casablanca jazzy blues kind of stuff, which I dig on it too. So let's play a track. The album's out July 10 via Org Music, which has an interesting connection, which we'll get to in a hot minute. But July 10 on Org Music, the record is called Enigma. This is You Will Feel My Pain. Feel My Pain. Great title, great song. What's the idea behind You Will Feel My Pain?
I was actually, just said it at one point jokingly to some colleagues at work, and I loved the expression. I thought about it, about how, at least for me, it's very hard for me to cover up everything that's going on, and not leak out to everyone. So it's sort of like, if I'm in agony, why shouldn't you feel my pain? Why shouldn't you feel the agony I go through? How is it that we expect to keep all this in when it's so destructive and painful sometimes?
So, well, how are you feeling right now? Are you feeling in pain right now? Are you feeling happy? How are you feeling right now?
Usually there's a little bit of low level rage, just like my original punk rock low level rage, feeling pretty anxious about the future and daunted by what's coming next. And but glad to be here and trying to stay right in the minute.
So what is, Kira, she's been in a lot of cool bands. We're going to talk about some of them. She's got a new project right now, but Kira has succeeded. She has survived. She's still doing her thing. She's got this new record coming out. You do sound editing for movies and TV shows. Is that what it is?
I do mostly dialogue and ADR, yeah, for movies, mostly movies, some TV.
So what is Kira's advice for staying above the water throughout one's life?
Staying above the water. Interestingly, I think that a lot of it comes to when you t have to take those big risks. You get something comes in front of you, and you have to sort of grab onto it, knowing that you're going to may have to give up something you thought was really important. You're letting go one thing, you're closing one door to open another. I've jumped with both feet several times out of one career into another, out of this, out of that, and taken and grabbed hold of something that sounded good, but also meant that I had to let some stuff go. So I think that life is kind of like that. You have to be willing sometimes to take some pretty daunting choices.
The press release sort of alluded to that, in that the press release alluded that you put out a bunch of records in the late 80s, early 90s, and then you kind of went away from music for a while and kind of went into movies and TV. Are you kind of alluding to the fact that there was a period of time where you weren't less visibly music-wise and were kind of more into the sound editing or
I
dialogue editing?
was always making music. No, I was just not I was just not concerning myself with other people hearing it. That's the part, like with all of us. I mean, artists, right? We're not salespeople. Like, what are we doing? How do we promote things when we can barely get out of bed, right? We're just creating things. And so I was creating songs and making songs and sending files back and forth long before anybody else was in virtual bands. I was in a virtual band sending stuff. So I never stopped. I just stopped feeling like I was going to try to put something out into the world. And then my brother convinced me to put that a solo record because I had so much material. And he was like, "Here, why don't you package some of this into a record?" And he sort of talked me into the first one. And another guy talked me into this one. Or I'd just be in my room, being ignored again.
There's two questions there. I'm going to ask one of them. I'm going to ask the follow-up to what you just said is, there's kind of two views, and this is kind of cerebral, but we'll go in and then we'll get a concrete question. This is kind of cerebral, but there's kind of two views of art, and one view of art is the true artist makes art for themselves. They don't make it with regards to the audience whatsoever. But then I'm going to make the counter argument. This, I'm paraphrasing Black Dahlia of the Dwarves. He says, I make art for it to be received by people. If someone makes a painting and puts it in the room and no one ever sees it, I don't know what the F that is. That's not art to me because it's not being received. Where do you feel on on that balance?
Well, clearly, I feel a little bit more on the first in the sense that there's a huge amount of joy in creating, I would say, in the creating process. There's a huge amount of joy and release of telling my story through my songs and writing a song about whatever strong feelings I'm having at any given time. I process my whole life by doing this. So I can't say, oh, that it doesn't matter if no one's looking. What mattered was that I expressed all those feelings. Now, I will say that there's value in letting it out there and people hearing it, but it's not required in my life. It's just not. It doesn't. I will consider myself an entertainer. If I'm going to go out there and talk to you, or I'm going to go out there and play a gig, I'm going to be an entertainer first. I'm not a musician. I'm an entertainer at that point. But when I'm in my room creating, I'm still being an artist, I think.
Well said, and you mentioned that you recorded with your brother Paul Rosler of the Screamers, Paul Rosler of Twisted Roots, which Kier was also in, Paul Rosler who played keyboards on Fresh Fruit for Rotting Vegetables. What's cool, and I remember when I interviewed Keith Levine of The Clash and PIL about 10 years ago, it was really, I thought it was very touching in that he was putting out a record and his sister was helping him put the handmade version of the record together. Like, how touching in that, like, he's been doing music for like 45 years and he's still close with his sister that they're working on art together. What's it like working with your brother in the studio? Is there a sibling relationship there, or is it more like a product? Like, how gentle are you with each other when you're in the studio with Paul?
I would say, whenever I go over there, we visit first. There's a part of us that are just sibling, catching up on things or talking. So there's that part of our relationship, and then we get down to business. We get down to business, and we he has become much more gentle with me as he's gotten older. He used to be rather stringent with me as my big brother, but he's softened with age, and it's really a beautiful relationship now and very productive. We get together all the time and just work on a song, whether or not, again, it's ever going to be on a record. We've been doing that, past Enigma. There's already a set of songs that we've been playing with,
I dig this record. This record has a lot of detours, the wrong word. A lot of journeys that I might not have guessed would be on this record. We're going to play How Could You a little bit later on. It's got kind of, I would say, a Casablanca kind of smoky jazz club kind of feel to it. Maybe you can talk a little bit about that track and kind of what was influencing you for this record. I don't even mean, it could be other albums, it could be movies, it could be No November Wind or something like, anything that was influencing you on this record,
it's usually starts with a phrase, like we talked about with "You Feel My Pain," and this one too. I had an argument, which I very rarely have, and I came out of it and I sort of wrote down, "How could you?" And then I calmed down and I looked at it and I kind of laughed, and I was like, sort of, that's hysterical. Like, that should be a song. In other words, very tongue in cheek. What if I wrote about that? How could you do this to me? Kind of feeling that we sometimes have when we get in a confrontation with someone, and I just want to capture those things. So I usually do it step down, and how the music actually goes in a direction, I can't tell you. I start just playing, and I play something, and then I see whether the lyrics kind of go with it, and I adjust lyrics or I adjust the lines. It's very strange and sort of a blank slate.
Well said. I think the record will kind of surprise a lot. Actually, and also, this record is very, this album is very much an album type album. It's 14 tracks. I feel like I've gone on a journey through it. I feel like I've explored a lot of universes in this record. How much effort did you put, say, let's make this a cohesive piece? And in 2026, does making a cohesive piece even matter? How important is the, I mean, when you think about it, the only quote reason an album exists is because someone decided 45 minutes is, or 44 minutes is what will fit on two sides of this device that I've created. So how important is the, I guess, the practicalities of the medium? Kind of an abstract question, but I think it fits with
It's
this record.
funny because certainly I observed that on other records. I was just thinking about Digital Ash and A Digital Urn and how beautifully perfect the beginning and the ending is of a record like that. So what happens with me, and it happened with both these solo records, and they're the only ones that I've had pure say on what was going to be on the record, is that the songs kind of go along year after year, decade after decade. And then when I decide to put a record out, I do start thinking about a theme. And there is a sort of theme, and the songs that I select support the theme. So this record came down to that song, Enigma, and it was written in honor of a good friend of mine, Glenn Brown, who plays guitar on two of the tracks, who I lost. And I wanted to honor, and I couldn't think of a better way to honor him than to try to put together a record that had, in my own way, tried to capture some stuff relating to him and honor him. So that the first record was about my dog. I do start with, when I go to put a record together, start with a theme, and I build it based on that theme. And then, you know, and then there are things I just want to do, like maybe do a cover song for the first time or something like that.
Well, we do have an interesting cover song on this record, although I don't know if a cover guy qualifies as a cover or not. It's got a radically changed version of the Black Flag track, Drinking and Driving. I do want to talk about some Black Flag stuff, but Kira, why was this track meaningful for you to quote cover for this record?
When I think about what's best about the Black Flag songs, I do love songs that Henry wrote the words for. Like I do love the way he's expressing his own thoughts. So those are the songs I tend to feel like are his my favorite Black Flag songs. And then this so the song, I was just noodling around one day and realized that it could be played in this sort of jazzy fashion, and I really liked pushing it in that direction. So I had this version for a while just in my room, and when I was putting together this honoring of my friend was very involved in the punk rock scene back in the day, and so that made sense to include something like that. I don't do covers hardly ever. I did in Dose, but I haven't really, you know, done a bunch of it. This is really the only one that I personally picked, selected, and I'm happy with the jazzy version.
You mentioned your friend Glenn Brown a couple of times, him being kind of the core of the track enigma and the idea behind the record. Maybe you could tell a little bit about your relationship with Glenn, why he was important to you, and how his presence, you know, is felt on this record.
Yeah, I mean, I knew Glenn since I was in junior high. He was a friend of my brother's. He was a guitar player. They were in bands together. He was just an annoying friend of my brother's for a long time. And then when punk rock happened, he came to LA, moved into our crash pad apartment, and we started a band immediately. And we were in like several bands in a row. Wax was our first band. We played the Whiskey and we did some stuff. And when that broke up because Paul joined the Screamers, so we had another band called the Visitors. So we were in bands together for years, and then he left LA, and we lost track for many years until MySpace came along, believe it or not, and we found each other on MySpace, and we started sending stuff back and forth. We immediately went back to let's do this work. He's in Cleveland and I'm in LA, so what? Let's send stuff back and forth, and Paul will mix it and add things, and you know, and we'll make some music. It just has been the natural thing for him with me. It's always been kind of hard though to get to the core of Glenn, which is why he's an enigma for me. So I feel like I didn't know him well. I didn't know he was in trouble when he died. I didn't I was never able to really fully get in. So even though I thought we were very close and we made a whole bunch of songs, and when COVID happened, I put together an album for him. I produced a record of all his songs that I had played bass on, but they were really his songs that he sang and played guitar on, and I put it out on Bandcamp to honor him. So it was always felt like I was trying to build a closeness that just was not allowed. There was something in my way. That's where the enigma comes. It's just never quite connected with him, but he meant so much. He influenced me so much. He had a real rock and roll background, and I had, you know, been sitting in my room just noodling and was very stiff, and he taught me about groove and relaxing and playing, and then we had two demos that we included on this record. What we did was we played to a click track that was the same tempo as the demo, so that we could re-record the song because they were all re-recorded, but that his guitar part could be on them. That's Peas and Kill Him.
You mentioned that, you know, you were friends with Glenn, but you know, there was always kind of something blocking a certain closeness. Do you find that you were close with most of your friends, or are you not close with you know, like some people have a lot of friends, but they're not really that close with them. Are you like really close with most of your friends? Are you close with your brother or?
I really struggle with people. I'm one of those people who, you know, I'm sort of best alone in my room, and I'm not that good at building relationships. I don't have a lot of close friendships. Paul and I are very close, and his son Adam also. We have a ongoing text, and we're sort of the closest core, I would say. And I am married, and I've been with my spouse for many years, so he's very close to me and my dogs, you know. And that's and that, but I struggle. So I would say that that's my struggle with Glenn was not the only one.
Well, you know, I think a lot of people can relate to that, and I think a lot of that can be felt in your music. How much, and this is another super question, I'm going to get back to more concrete questions. How much emotion do you feel is expressed through your bass playing itself? How much concept do you express through your bass playing, you know?
I think it's very expressive for me. I mean, I think that the music aspect, taking away the voice, I mean, the interplay especially. I mean, I write these songs with a lot of with two basses, with interplay, and then Paul takes the second bass line and interprets it into a piano part with all this interplay rhythmically. And I think it tells this story, and it captures a lot of emotion in and of itself, that interplay and that struggling with each other, even without the words. But the voice is just another instrument in that, you know. And when I write, those three things kind of get created together, and that becomes the core of the song that then I work with the drummer and work with Paul to turn into more of a band thing, because we created a band after the first record.
I'm going to ask a question about the cover again, then we're going to play the connection game real quick. With the Black Flag cover, I'm gonna paraphrase or mostly quote Penny Rimbaud of Crass. And Penny Rimbaud of Crass says, "I'm immensely proud of what we did in Crass, but sometimes it's like having a chain around your neck." So I'm curious, you're connected to Black Flag. You were in Black Flag for a number of years. You've definitely played on Black, some of their greatest songs ever. What's your relationship with Black Flag? The artistic output, you know, the label. How do you feel connected to that? You're like, yes, I was Black Flag's second bass player or their second main player, you know, after Dukowski. Yes, I was, or you're like, that's one thing I did, but that's not the only thing I did. What's your relationship like with Black
Well,
Flag?
yeah, I mean, it is only 2 or 3 years out of 65 now, you know. So you do feel like it's just one of these things that I was talking about, one of these things I grabbed onto, I ran really hard with, and then the next thing happened, you know. So I have no regrets or no negative feeling. I don't feel at all like it's an anchor. It's a wonderful experience that I got to have that becomes part of how I look at the world. But it is a small, it's just another small part in a really big journey with a lot of things along the way.
What I thought was interesting, and we'll see if M can suss this out. M, Kira, bass player of Black Flag. What other member of Black Flag has a solo record on Org Music, who's putting out Kira's new records? Chuck Dukowski, the other Black Flag bass player. Is that just
Oh,
coincidence,
cool.
or what's that like having both Black Flag bass players on the same label, you know?
Look, the Dose was on Org Music way back. I love what Org Music's doing. They're re-releasing Descendants. They're getting Bad Brains. They got stuff going on over there at Org Music, and I didn't know what to do when this friend of mine was talking about putting a second record together. So I just contacted the head of the label because he had put out a Dose record, and I thought, well, maybe he'd be interested if he's into that weird of music, that weird punk rock music. Maybe he'd be into my weird punk rock music too, because I mean, it is kind of not for everyone, just like punk rock.
And one more Black Flag question. Then we got some other well, Black Flag related question. At Punk News, about 3 weeks ago, we threw a Dez Kadena solo show where we had Dez doing all Black Flag, which was super cool. That was really my. Well, actually, I've interacted with Dez a little bit, but this was my first kind of extended interaction with Dez, and I was shocked at how laid back Dez is. Dez is a laid back guy. You were for a period of time in one of my favorite kind of more obscure SST bands, DC3. What was it like playing with Dez and DC3? Who was Dez to you?
Yeah, I was in DC3 when Black Flag asked me to join, and I had to have a horrible conversation with Des. That one of those situations where I had to give up one thing that I really cared about to do another. And the idea of a three-piece band, was really cool to me. I wanted to do it. And then when Black Flag asked me to join, they were my favorite band, and it was really hard to say no. So I tried to get Paul to join and be like a bass player on keyboards. Like, that was my idea, like make it a three-piece. But Paul wasn't a bass player, and they couldn't he did join, but he couldn't do the bass thing. So they ended up getting a bass player, and DC3 became a four-piece, which is But Des is very laid back and a real sweetheart, and it's hard to imagine him in his singer of Black Flag phase, but he has that rage. We all carry whatever happened to us, right? We all carry this the, these the bad things that have happened to us in our life, and we just have to sort of pocket it down into this rage where occasionally we get to let it out. And he got to do that. And most of his life, he's just laid back, and he gets along with everybody. He's very easygoing. Yeah.
Another interesting project that you want, there was a Germs tribute in the mid-90s, and you covered the Germs Now You Hear the Laughter with Dave Markey, Thurston Moore, and Mike D of the Beastie Boys. Do you have
Yep.
any fond memories or unfond memories of recording that, and how that came
No,
about?
I love that. I love the song. When Thurston asked, I thought it was so cool. I really wanted to do it. I have known the Germs since I was in junior high. They went to school again with my brother. They were friends with my brother in high school, and so I knew them both, Pat and Darby, from way back. So getting to cover it was beautiful.
And actually, along those lines, maybe you can just give me some advice here. Is one time I was interviewing a musician that knew Darby Crash. I was like, "Yeah, Darby Crash, what was it like hanging out?" And the musician actually got kind of upset and sad. And I realized, to me, Darby Crash is this iconic musician singer, but to that person, Darby Crash is their friend that's dead and died way too early, you know.
Yeah,
So, you
yeah,
know, in the LA punk scene, the punk scene, a lot of people pass away very, very early, you know.
yeah.
What is it like having to deal with those things as people are talking about, like maybe Black Randy, the Metro Squad, or Darby Crash, or all these musicians that has passed away, and they were your I don't know if Black Randy was your friend or not, but like all these people that were your friends, and there people are talking about them like as a mythology, but they're actual people that have died. Like, what is that like, you know?
Well, it's almost like you have two relationships with them. For me, I have the relationship with him that was so sad, and I was so sorry that I hadn't been a little more connected and maybe could have helped or talked through. I saw him that night. I could have done more. I could have hung out with him, maybe talked some more, maybe something different could have happened, that sort of that angst, all of that discomfort. And then there's a part of me that totally puts him on a pedestal, and the music and the creativity and the lyrics that he wrote, and the part that he played in the little LA punk scene. I'm able to separate that and celebrate that part without pain. So it's kind of a matter of seeing two different people in a little bit.
That's interesting. I'm sure that's a interesting thing to juggle. One other question about one of your other bands, then we'll bring it back to their current record, which is out real soon.
Yeah.
Kira, Enigma, it's out July 10 on Org
Yes.
Music. You should definitely go check it out. Before we get back, let's ask one more question. Twisted Roots. I love Twisted Roots. To me, that's what LA punk is all about, and that it's arty, it's weird. You're on the CD called Twisted Roots, and maybe you're on a couple of the singles or
Yeah,
whatever.
yeah.
And everyone should definitely check out that record. It's super cool. Well, when you were in Twisted Roots, was it well received? Was it a challenge to the fans? What was it like being in
It
Twisted
was a
Roots?
little bit of a challenge, because we came from the punk rock scene, but Paul had really written some, little more poppy songs, I guess I would say. And I thought he was leaning into that a little bit. And so, and yet, like with some other bands I've been in, it was Paul's band. A lot of times people think bands are democracies. Most of the time they're benevolent dictatorships. The songwriter is in charge, and what he says goes. So I was a member of a team trying to support Paul doing his thing. But there was some struggle with, you know, people getting into it. I thought it was really cool that the single with, there's some stuff that I forget. I was playing some really cool bass lines in that stuff. And, you know, I just, I always think of it in a way like things started from Black Flag and move forward. But no, I mean, there was some really cool stuff going on back then. And that's part of why Black Flag asked me to join, because they had seen me around, you know, as a small scene at the time. They had seen it. They had seen Twisted Roots.
Actually, I'm going to throw out what might be a radical idea, and feel free to disagree. I would argue that most bands, not all bands, not Chumbawamba, for example, most bands work best as a benevolent dictatorship, because when everyone has to tries to drive the car, it kind of crashes. What's your opinion on that?
Absolutely. It's super difficult. It's like a marriage of a bunch of people, right? Which is why bands break up. You for a while, you all have the same ideas and you're all sort of geared into it. But think of it. If you have a benevolent dictatorship and you're not a paid gun, you're not getting paid, you know, it's a tough road. You are committing yourself to someone else's dream and you're putting a lot of energy into it. And it's very hard to sustain that. For the songwriter, look at Greg Ginn, right? He's trying to sustain something and he's just going through people, you know, and he's trying to sustain something. It's not an easy task. And a lot of people just give up after trying. I tried to have an all-girl band called Sexic. It did not last long. And it wasn't an all-girl band for long. I had a boy drummer pretty quick. So this is challenging for anyone. I admire bands like the Rolling Stones who can hold it together. I don't know. Do you think they're a democracy?
No, I think it's run by Keith and Mick. And I think Keith just wants to be the Rolling Stone. I think it's a marriage. I think it's 50-50, but not in 50-50 they each get a vote. I think they've got different gears that they each pull. And they're the two main guys. I think Charlie Watts, RIP, was just kind of like, I'm there to drum. I love Charlie Watts because he best drummer ever, maybe. He looks so bored being in the Rolling Stones. I love Charlie Watts. Anyways, I can talk about the Rolling Stones all day long. I got maybe two or three last questions for you, but I got to ask this because you brought up. You said, look at Greg Ginn. He's trying to channel this vision or whatever. I'm perhaps surprised that we talk about Greg Ginn in this objective form, because a lot of people have very strong feelings about Greg Ginn. Maybe you have a perspective on, quote, New Black Flag, and maybe you have a perspective on Flag. I love Flag. New Black Flag, newest Black Flag, I'm actually sort of somewhat interested. But overall,
I'm exactly that. I'm very curious because these young kids probably have that rage and energy, you know, and are ready to go kick some ass. It's probably, you know, captures those songs as well as any, you know, version of them. I bet they're great. I bet they're really fun. And there's a lot of energy there. I think they should do some new songs, probably, you know, put a new record out and go for it. Greg writes songs all the time. It'll happen. Yeah, I mean, it's funny. There's two sides of it for me with Greg too. I have my personal relationship with Greg is extremely difficult, but my sort of fangirl version of Greg is I admire his tenacity and his songwriting and his willingness to fight that fight forevermore, whether and to just get rid of people he doesn't like that he gets tired of, or they stop doing what he wants or whatever.
Well, listen, speaking of internal rage, Kier's got a brand new record coming out. It's cool. It's called Enigma. It's out July 10 on Org Music. You can hear about three songs online now. We're about to play How Could You? But my last question for Kieran. Kieran, thank you for coming on the podcast. It's been a ball. Anytime you want to come on, just let us know, and we would love to have you back on.
Okay, cool.
What would you like people to take from the record? What would you like them to feel? What would you like them to think about while listening to the new record?
It's exactly what you were talking about. There's this journey. I want you to feel the emotions under them. Each song does have this this theme in and of itself, where it's trying to say something to you very specifically, something that you've been through in some way or other. It doesn't have to be the same as what I went through, but you went through something like this, and we have commonality. We have a connection, and I want you to connect to those emotions because they're there and you felt them.
Well, we will feel it together and we will get through it together. This is How Could You by Kier off a new record on Org Records. Kier, thanks for coming on. It's been a real blast. We've loved talking to you, and hopefully we'll talk to you again soon.
Great. Thank you so much. Take care of yourself.
Take care. Bye bye.
Bye.
How could you?